Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Every couple of weeks, we check out interesting structures in and around Chicagoland that make us wonder, what is that building? That's when Reset's architecture guru, Dennis Rodkin, fills us in on all the rich history hidden under concrete foundations. This time around, we head downtown Chicago to the corner of Van Buren and Clark, where the two-story Yukon building has stood for well over 120 years. You might recognize it from its popular tenants, like the Skyride Tap, an old dive bar, and Cochina, the Mexican restaurant. But after the departure of three other tenants, how much longer will the historic building stand? Dennis Rodkin of Crane's Chicago Business joined us with more for our What's That Building series. And he kicked things off describing what the Yukon building looks like and why he says it's easy to overlook. Here's Dennis.
One reason is that right across the street is one of our most beloved buildings, the Metropolitan Correctional Center, the jail, the triangular jail designed by Harry Weese, which everybody sees on architecture tours. But another is that this has been wrapped in signage and it's kind of run down and it's only two stories high. It's easy just to walk by. You might enjoy the sign for the Skyride Tap. You might enjoy the sign for what's now closed Bonavino restaurant. But the building itself just looks like a little two-story, nothing in particular.
Yeah, but you do get this better vantage point of it if you go up two stories, what, across the street?
on the steps to the L stop that empty right there. The LaSalle and Van Buren L stop, if you walk up the steps there, you're on the corner looking down both facades of this building. It stretches along Clark and Van Buren. And so at the second story level, first, at the very top, you see a metal cap that's modern, that sort of, you know, is keeping the roof in place. But what you're really looking at when you're standing there on those stairs is this run of corbels or brackets, very Victorian sort of a device that would hold up a roof. Then right on the corner is really, I think, one of the coolest features. There's this very frilly ornamental work that holds the corner there on the second floor, which, again, you can't really see from the sidewalk. But when you look at this detail under layers and layers of cracked paint, you can see the letter Y in four places for Yukon.
Y for Yukon.
And then below that, what you see is ribbons of windows that run, again, along Clark and along Van Buren. Right now, you can see that that second floor is empty by looking through those windows. But you're looking at this long row of windows. This is a building built in 1898.
Yeah.
But sort of banded glass, which is a very...
Interesting for 1898.
It's a precursor to modern design.
Yeah. But as I alluded to earlier, Dennis, and it feels to me like this is a when it rains, it pours type of situation
That's exactly it.
You know, it's up for sale by the folks who have owned it for at least the last half a century. They're behind on property taxes. Three tenants have moved out. What is going on?
The family is aging. I know they've owned it since 1967, possibly longer. This is the Bakovic family. They ran Bonavino, the restaurant. A family member who was running the restaurant and sort of maintaining the building had an illness. And so a lot of things sort of started to fall apart. They had, I mentioned that second floor is empty. They had a tenant using the offices there who moved out overnight. John Bakovic told me. Cochina, one of the restaurants, left. And as I said, Bonavino closed.
Yeah.
And they're behind on their taxes. The property tax bill has not been paid in at least 2 years. When you look at the Cook County Treasurer's website, you see that the 2022 taxes were bought by a tax buyer. And that's a very complicated system where somebody can pay your derelict taxes. And then over the course of years, they might be able to obtain ownership of the building. And what John Bakovic told me is they can't afford, even if they get those spaces refilled, they can't afford the tax bill, which is $210,000 a year. And of course, they also have the expenses of the building. It's not that all the rent would just go to property taxes, but he told me flat out, we can't afford to cover the property taxes, which have gone up and up over the years. Even with all those spaces filled, and now a bunch of the building is empty, they also have had it on the market for a while, in large part because, again, the family's aging. They've owned this building since the 1960s. And what John Bakovic told me is it's very likely that whoever buys it in order to build something new on the site.
Yeah. So with all of that happening at the same time, that sort of domino effect of issues, the primary focus then becomes, let's just sell this thing. It's probably better if we sell it.
I think so. And again, they had been trying to sell it in the past. I think if they can get it rented, they would hang on as long as they can.
Yeah.
Because one of the questions is, who buys to build a high rise when there is so much commercial real estate empty downtown?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you build residential, but it is important to keep in mind you've got the L tracks on one side and a jail on the other. Does a residential builder go there?
The Yukon used to be known as a taxpayer building.
Yeah, this is one of the saddest ironies I can think of. So again, the family can't pay the taxes. This was built by a family as what was known as a taxpayer building. This is something I learned from Tim Samuelson, the retired cultural historian of the city of Chicago.
Yes.
He says that this is probably the oldest taxpayer building still standing in the city during the skyscraper boom in particular. But when there was any time there was a lot of speculation in downtown Chicago, people would essentially land bank sites. You would buy something and say, I'm going to put a high rise here, but until I do, I'm putting up something that will pay the taxes. I'm putting up a taxpayer building. And that happened here. It was designated for a high rise from the late 1880s. A previous owner was going to build a high rise. And then the Brooks family, who bought it in 1884, said they were going to build a 12-story building. Then they said they were going to build a 6-story building. And then they put up a 2-story building that was a taxpayer.
And you mentioned the Brooks family there. You're alluding to Peter Brooks, right? He's the one who bought and developed what we know today as this Yukon building.
Peter Brooks was a Boston investor. He sometimes worked with his brother, Shepard Brooks, but over the course of more than 40 years, Peter Brooks built several high-rises in downtown Chicago, beginning right after the fire. He built one of the first high-rises that went up after the fire. That building no longer exists, but he's buying up land in order to put up high-rises. And this site, the Yukon, is right there by what was the Board of Trade building at the time. So he's land banking sites to build high rises all over town. He built several that no longer exist, the Tacoma, the Portland, but he also built some of the buildings we love most.
Yeah, what would we recognize of Peter Brooks' work?
Well, he built the Rookery, really one of the most important buildings in downtown Chicago historically. He built the Marquette building, which is absolutely beautiful. He built the Monadnock. These are some of the sort of founding bits of Chicago's high-rise history.
That's incredible.
And there's also a building built very late in his career, built when he was in his 80s in the 1910s, called the Brook Building, which is on Jackson Boulevard. That's still standing.
The architecture firm that he's working with on these?
Halliburton and Roach.
Okay.
One of the founding firms in Chicago's architectural patrimony. They did a few other buildings for him. They did part of the Monadnock Building. And then he taps them to do this.
Okay.
And so what's going on is they're essentially doing kind of a preliminary design with this 2-story building. There are no drawings left of what they designed to go taller, but presumably you would have either recapitulated what the lower floors look like or built something taller with a similar sort of a look. So they come in with what the Tribune described at the time as a unique look, which is those bands of windows.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons, in an old article about this building from decades ago, I read that Peter Brook would say, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of money here. And so the architects would have to sort of innovate and use unusual materials. And in this case, they had been experimenting with using a lot of glass. And so they used a whole lot of glass. So you can't quite see it at the sidewalk level because of the restaurants.
You got to go up.
All the signage. But when you go to that second floor, it looks like you're looking at something from the 1940s or 1950s.
Oh, cool. That is super cool. And all of this, as you described, I mean, this was all part of a bigger plan, bigger than Peter Brook's, to just in the mid-1880s fill the downtown with skyscrapers, ultimately. Right.
Right. Yeah. And the only problem is it just never goes that far south.
Yeah.
We still have many skyscrapers from that period, although some, including buildings that the Brookses built, were then supplanted by taller and then even taller buildings. So some of them are gone. But we might have had right on this corner another one.
All right. We'll leave it there for now. That's Dennis Rodkin, Crane, Chicago Business, residential real estate reporter and Reset's architecture sleuth. Good to see you again, Dennis.
Thanks, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by me, Sasha Ann Simons. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Join us on adventures all around town by subscribing to the podcast or visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.